As recent tallies of U.S. publishing revenues make clear, the book business needs a big book to have a big year. Now, halfway through the calendar, we can safely predict that 2015 is going to be really big. Welcome to Copyright Clearance and His podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. The E.L. James penned trilogy that began with 50 Shades of Grey has sold over 100 million copies worldwide and been translated into 52 languages. Booksellers were ecstatic, of course, and they have suffered while waiting for more from Christian Grey. But that wait will end soon. And with word on the details is Andrew Albany, senior writer for Publishers Weekly, who joins us every Friday on Beyond the Book. And Andrew, welcome back to the show.
Greetings, Chris.
Well, we'll get to the big news on that particular account, news that we'll be breaking with books arriving later this month. But just the end of May last month, we saw the Book Expo America and Book Con shows at the Javits Center, and in Monday's issue, you're going to have an interesting take on where things go afterwards. First of all, this was really a major success for BookCon, which is really just still very much a youngster as far as the trade shows are concerned.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I'm glad to see that everybody survived BEA and BookCon okay, and I thought both were BEA and BookCon were pretty strong shows this year, despite all the changes that BEA made to the program and the dates of the program, etc. But I think the big headline coming out of last week has to be the success of BookCon. And indeed, that is the big headline for Monday's issue of Publishers Weekly in the story by PW News director, my colleague Rachel Deal. Rachel notes that BookCon attendance surged by 80%. It drew 18,000 fans for the two-day show this year. But the positive reaction to the New York-based BookCon has created something of a problem because in only a second year, and showing such great growth and promise, it now picks up and goes to Chicago next year. So Brian McDonald, who's the director of strategic accounts for Reed Exhibitions, which runs BEA and BookCon, acknowledged to PW that Reed is indeed looking to actually expand the possibility, possibly of including a New York BookCon in 2016, as well as a Chicago BookCon, because the New York show was such a booming success. Now, how that would work exactly is not clear. And we've already heard whispers from publishers about, you know, complaining about having to potentially cover the cost of attending two similar shows in what could be a very short time frame. But Chris, I think Rachel in her story hits it just right, noting that 2 years ago, when Reed Exhibitions announced that it was going to be adding a consumer component to the annual trade show for publishers and booksellers, reactions were pretty mixed. And I would say they veered towards negative. In fact, we heard a lot of complaints then from publishers who were unsure about what a consumer show was going to mean for BEA. But I think now, after this year, we know what it means. You know, it's a chance to connect with 18,000 fans and probably growing. So to me, this is a good problem to have. And if I were a publisher, I would focus less on complaining about having to pay for two shows, and I would jump at the chance, to every chance I had, to connect with readers. In fact, I'd do 10 book cons around the country next year if I could. Now, obviously, it's a logistical issue, but this is great marketing, no question. And for me, the most important thing is that publishers need to get better at exactly this, dealing with their fans directly. So, you know, as tough as it might be to plan for this, I see this as a golden opportunity for publishers to just dive in and begin to reach more readers directly, to develop new expertise in reaching readers directly. And this is the way I think publishers should view the Chicago, New York problem that they're facing right now. Budgets be damned.
Well, you know, I have to agree with you 100% on all of that, Andrew. Publishers really need to start thinking about opportunities and not looking out at the blue sky and wondering if it's going to rain. This is tremendous for them. That jump in attendance at BookCon really should be telling them that more rather than less of this ought to be on the schedule. So we'll look forward to that report from Rachel in this coming issue of PW. Also in Monday's issue is a romance feature. And as I previewed, we've got some big news coming in that area. We're going to have a new E.L. James book.
That's right. There is a big romance feature package in PW this week. And of course, the big news that you mentioned in the intro, we have a new 50 Shades of Grey book to talk about. This week, E.L. James announced that she would be releasing another installment in the 50 Shades of Grey series, this time told from the perspective of Christian Grey, which I think is kind of ingenious, kind of like what Wicked did with, you know, telling the Wizard of Oz story from the witch's point of view, except with a sadistic male billionaire instead of a witch. Now, what's notable is that you know, it only took hours after the announcement before pre-orders pushed, I think this is called Grey, 50 Shades of Grey, as told by Christian, to the top of the bestseller list, both at Barnes & Noble and on Amazon. And as of our discussion right now, the book is number one in physical and digital at both retailers, even though it's not going to be released until June 18th. And I think it has a 1.25 million copy first print run title. So as you said, get ready. We have a big author about to release a big book and about to be in the news again.
Well, I imagine that is really warming the hearts of not only Barnes & Noble and Amazon, but just a lot of independent booksellers who will be happy to sell that book as well as some others to anyone that comes through the store. Listen, speaking of big authors in the news, we've got an article this week in PW about a copyright suit from the late J.D. Salinger, and copyright and J.D. Salinger kind of go together. He's been fairly litigious, as well as his representatives over the years. And this is true now, even that he's passed on. So tell us, what's going on?
That's right. So while we were all distracted with BEA and 50 Shades of Grey, lawyers for the J.D. Salinger Literary Trust were filing a motion to dismiss a lawsuit filed against them by Memphis-based indie publisher the DeVoe Graves Agency. Now, we talked a little bit about this case when it was first filed, and for our listeners, recap it briefly. In March of this year, DeVoe Graves sued the Salinger Literary Trust for tortiously interfering with the publisher's attempts to license foreign editions of its book, J.D. Salinger, Three Early Stories. Now, that book is a collection of three Salinger works that had each lapsed into the public domain decades ago, all prior to 1972. The DeVoe Graves Agency is seeking damages, and they want a declaration from a court in Tennessee that the Salinger Literary Trust has no rights to the works in question, and they want an affirmation that the publisher can sell its collection globally without interference. In essence, they believe that the Salinger estate is rattling cages around the world, threatening illegal, threatening lawsuits against foreign publishers who would publish these public domain books. But I think this week's filing from the Salinger Trust demonstrates that the DeVoe Graves may have underestimated the strength of their own claim here. Now, the Salinger Literary Trust does not dispute that the stories in question are in the U.S. public domain. They lost their protection after their initial 28-year copyrights were not renewed. Of course, Congress has since eliminated the requirement to register and renew new works. But in their filings, attorneys for the Salinger Literary Trust say that even though the works are in the public domain in the U.S., that does not mean that they're in the public domain overseas. And they argue that DeVoe Graves' understanding of international copyright is critically flawed. Specifically, they take aim at the DeVoe Graves Agency's reliance on Article 7 of the Berne Convention. Now, that's known as the rule of the shorter term, and it generally mandates that copyright protection among signatories cannot exceed the term mandated in the work's country of origin. But the Berne Convention's terms are subject to a number of caveats, and this includes other existing treaties and the specific copyright laws of each member country. And Salinger attorneys argue that in order to grant the DeVoe Agency's sweeping declaration, that they'd have to pore over all the laws and all the treaties of all 168 countries that have signed on to the Berne Convention. So while maybe that's not an impossible task, it's certainly not feasible. Alas, the Salinger Trust argues these issues are best left to the foreign courts.
Well, a terrific argument, and one that gets bolstered by some news that has slipped out that at least in one country, the Salinger estate has been successful in convincing the judges of the power of their argument.
That's exactly right. You know, bolstering the Salinger Trust argument here, they also filed with the court in Tennessee a copy of a March 31st order from the regional court in Berlin, which bars Piper Verlag, a publisher in Germany, from distributing J.D. Salinger Three Early Stories in that country. And that decision could really stand as a serious blow to the DeVoe Graves Agency's chances of success in their suit. Now, in their complaint, DeVoe Graves attorneys claim that the Salinger Literary Trust doesn't own, and in fact has never owned, the copyrights to the stories in question. And as evidence, they cite this blanket copyright assignment that Salinger himself issued to the Salinger Literary Trust shortly before he died in 2010. And that list does not include the works in question, which it, of course, already had entered the U.S. public domain. But the German court held that German copyright law was the standard in this case. And under German law, Salinger had clearly intended an encompassing assignment of rights, the court found. And that was sufficient under German copyright law for his heirs to subsequently claim rights which Salinger may have been unaware of including foreign rights. Now, Salinger attorneys argue that at a minimum, the German court decision belies the main contention in DeVoe Graves' argument, which is that the trust is interfering in their foreign deals without any legal basis. And I have to believe they're right about that.
Well, you know, it's fascinating stuff. I'm certainly not a lawyer, but hang around enough of them around here with Copyright Clearance Center to pick up some interesting catchphrases. And of course, territoriality is one when it comes to copyright, meaning that individual national laws apply. And so the Germans can certainly make all of these assertions quite correctly. And though it has an impact on U.S. law, it is kind of frustrating for anybody trying to get around it. And then the other sort of catchphrase to say is droit d'auteur, which is the rights of authors. And I'm just reading into what you've told us about that German court case, and it sounds to me like they really are giving the benefit of the doubt to the author in this case, as European courts are wont to do. So it's really fascinating stuff. And when we talked earlier about the case back in March when DeVoe Graves sued the Salinger Literary Trust, you made some observations at that point that were pretty interesting. You got anything to add?
Yeah, so when the Salinger Trust says that, you know, Salinger failed to include the three public domain stories and his transfer of copyrights to the trust back in 2010, Salinger Trust says that's evidence of nothing, but I think it's evidence of Salinger's deep desire to bury these stories forever, something that he's actually alluded to in a few of the rare interviews he did give. In fact, one in 1974, where he even outright says that he wanted these stories to die a natural death. Now, I think Salinger understood that these stories were in the public domain in the U.S., and thus probably never included them in that copyright transfer, but I don't think he ever expected that these stories would surface again in Europe. And what is remarkable to me is that the estate is conceding that the stories are in the public domain in the world's largest market and the world's prevalent language in English, but they're willing to spend millions of dollars in litigation to lodge claims to the copyrights abroad just so they can stop their publication in minor markets in Italian, in German, in Spanish. To me, it reflects the sometimes bizarre wishes of authors and how they can pass these bizarre wishes on to their estates. And I think it's a sign that DeVoe Graves may have picked the wrong battle here. And also, I think they may have ill-defined their battle, too, because there's simply no way, the German decision, I think, is an example of this, that a U.S. court can issue a proclamation that would stop the Salinger estate from suing in a foreign court, or that a foreign court would even recognize the legitimacy of a U.S. court decision telling them what to do. So we'll keep an eye on this case, but I don't think it's looking very good for the DeVoe Graves estate.
Well, indeed. And you know, this does show that when it comes to copyright, at least, you can reach beyond the grave. Ed Robany, senior writer for Publishers Weekly. We really appreciate and always enjoy chatting with you every Friday on Beyond the Book. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.